Hello and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name is Andy Warren and I'm joined by a man who is rejoicing because the KFC drought is over. That's Stuart Watson.
Good morning.
You're rejoicing because the KFC drought is over.
Well, yeah, I did have a mighty bucket for one at about 10:30 at Peterborough Services last night. So, another healthy day on the road.
No shortage of chicken at Peterborough Services for people. People were flocking there last night. It's been a mad week.
National crisis.
Yeah, people have had to go to Burger King. That lady on the news, love her. But it's over, and Ipswich got 3 points at Preston. What a weekend.
Yeah, good stuff. Fully deserved win, wasn't it, yesterday, I thought. Two very different halves of football. First half, very good, very exciting. Mazi Carriol to the fore. 1-0 up at half time. Should have been 3 or 4, probably. And then Mick kind of shut up shop at half time, didn't he, tactically? Thank goodness it worked. They scrapped their way out. I have to say, Preston never looked like scoring. Defended very well. Job done, 1-0. 3 points in the bag.
We'll probably get on to the Preston game in a bit more detail in a bit. But really, the Preston game marked the end of a pretty bizarre week for Ipswich Town, didn't it? That started with a 95th minute heartbreaking equaliser at Norwich, followed by an apology from the manager on Monday to the fans. Slightly improved, but a disappointing defeat to Cardiff, and then a victory on the Saturday. What an odd week. A lot's happened since the last time we did one of these.
It has, yeah. I think the last one we did would have been post-Burton, was it? The 0-0 draw there. So yeah. Certainly improved performances all round from that Burton game. I think we have to say that first and foremost. Did they deserve more than 4 points out of those last three games? Probably, yes. It's been kind of... we've just been talking about a tale of two halves against Preston. The issue's been that they've played well in patches and they've not quite been able to string two good halves together. And that's kind of encapsulates the season, really, hasn't it? They've played well in patches but never been able to string results together, keep sort of form going, even over 90 minutes, let alone sort of back-to-back games. So, very good first half at Norwich. Second half, not so much. Cardiff, I thought, again, first half, they played some really nice football, obviously, switching to this new 3-4-3 system. Played some decent stuff. First half against Cardiff. And then we've spoken about Saturday already. So the performances have been, without going over the top, have been good. I mean, I don't know whether we've lowered our barometer, our standard bar has dropped so low in the last 18 months, whether we've gone a little bit over the top about some of the performances. But I think they've been reasonable enough, good enough, and probably did deserve maybe one or two more points from the three games.
Well, all of that, we're talking just a few minutes after Cardiff have beaten Bristol City. So all of that does actually leave Ipswich Town 6 points off the playoffs. But I think we're not expecting a playoff push. Mick doesn't sound as if he's expecting a playoff push, and the players aren't expecting a serious playoff push. It's a bit strange because it is only 6 points, but I think that's more down to Ipswich's form, lack of form, and lack of consistency in results. It would take a real turnaround for them to really force their way over quite a number of teams.
Yeah,
and make their way in.
6 points is not insurmountable, is it? With what, 12 games to go still, somebody can make a late dash up from sort of mid-table to the top six. Happens quite a lot, doesn't it? I think that would require Ipswich to string together a number of wins and put together an incredible run of form, and I just don't see them being in a place to do that. They don't feel like they're slowly coming to the boil and ready to catch light.
It's the goals, isn't it? They're not scoring enough goals.
No. Defensively, I think they've looked really good of late. Carter Vickers, very impressed with him on loan from Tottenham. I think he's well suited to a back three. I think the back three suits Ipswich Town with Webster back in the team and looking increasingly back to his imperious best. I like a front three, works quite well for Ipswich. It enables Mick to get some flair and some wide players in there. Carriol, We've been waxing lyrical about from the weekend. Selena is obviously enables him to get into the team. My only issue is that I'm not sure that there's a midfield general to kind of knit it all together in there, the person that's going to supply the ammunition. And as you say, the goals have dried up since earlier in the season. And that's probably the reason why Ipswich are going to fall short. We've been saying for a long, long time now, haven't we, that they look very much a mid-table side. Win, draw, lose. Last week kind of sums up where they are. And to be honest, I think they'll probably end up somewhere between 10th and 13th, 14th. That's probably their natural place.
I guess the manner of the performances and the results between now and the end of the season will decide whether that's a reasonably, if not over the top, positive 10th or a really, really quite negative 14th. That much is still to decide, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. Results certainly aren't changing the mood at the moment. You know, win at Sunderland and win at Deepdale yesterday, and it's not as if people are rejoicing at these victories at the moment, and I think that's kind of indicative of the mood at the moment. Even some reasonable performances, I have to say. I thought the performance against Cardiff, to go back to that one, I thought was the best footballing performance from Ipswich for a long time. I thought they tried to they went in with a game plan, no Garner, no Waghorn. They put three of their quick, nippy players up front to get a sort of a physical Cardiff back line, and they made a real effort to get the ball down on the deck and play, and it was a reminder to me that these players are capable of playing football if allowed to do so, and they clearly had been given the instructions to play that way on Wednesday night, and they played their way out of the back. They played nice little triangles under pressure, some neat little balls around the corner up the line. Thought it was pretty entertaining to watch, but I was kind of shot down in flames by quite a few people when saying what game did you watch? I didn't see a lot of that. And yes, they didn't carve open loads of chances and there wasn't a huge end product to it, but I thought it was a reminder that they can play a bit of football if allowed to do so, which opens up the debate about Mick and would a different manager get different qualities out of the same set of players and all the rest of it. But there's some encouraging signs in there, and of course, you know, there's players to come back into it. I've been talking about the midfield debate and that being an issue, of course. You know, Emir Hughes, Tom Adeyemi, Bishop Dazelle, they could have all made a big difference to that and might make a big difference to it next season, we'll see.
Before we get on to Mick, which we'll talk about in a fair bit of detail, I'd imagine, should we talk about just some positive players from this weekend? And the first one you mentioned was Cameron Carter-Vickers, who, you know, he had a steady debut and almost ever since has looked, you know, imperious in many games. So strong on the floor, decent in the air, if not spectacular, but positionally and in terms of his position, starting position and awareness of what's around him, he's a fantastic football player, isn't he?
Yeah, you can see that sort of Premier League pedigree about him. He sees the picture, isn't he? He's complete opposite to Luke Chambers, who's a kind of a block and header and all action, and you don't really notice Cameron, but in a good way, you know, and you never see him sort of on the ground and diving in. He just sees the picture. He's not the biggest. He's not the quickest.
No.
But he's as strong as an ox. You can't shake him off the ball. And you're right. He just reads the game, and amount of times that he'll win a header and he doesn't try and sometimes thump the header back up to the halfway line. Not only will he win the 50-50 header, but he'll nod it down into a clever bit of space for a teammate. And been very impressed with him. What's he worth in the current market? Who knows? He's only 20. I don't think Spurs will even entertain the idea of selling him, seeing the way he's played this season, both for Sheffield United and Ipswich. Whether they think they'll need him in the next year or so, possibly not. So maybe there's a chance Ipswich could get him on a season-long loan next season. That's got to be their best hope.
He's certainly done enough to push that cause. But with him in a back three, for me, you've got a bit of everything there with Carter-Vickers, Chambers and Webb. So we've talked about Carter-Vickers. In Chambers, you've got the organiser, the rugged last-ditch man who's happy to chuck himself on the floor, chuck his head at anything, And he does organise that back three. You can see him doing it. He's vocal. Then Adam Webster, who glides around the pitch, is getting better and better in the air against big championship defenders. And I thought yesterday at Preston, he stepped out of defence a little more and used the ball, which is what we're told he's good at, but I haven't always seen. So in that back three, you've got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I think suits the personnel. You've summed that up perfectly there. I think sort of this 3-4-3 works on many levels, really. I've talked about it being the sort of the compromise between 4-2-3-1 and a wing-back system. I think it enables them to be good defensively and going forward. It enables Mick to give some freedom to his front players.
And his full-backs. We've seen that from Iorfa, haven't we? He looks a lot more comfortable in that than he does as a standard right back.
Absolutely, yeah. We've talked about him being better going forwards than defensively, a little bit suspect positionally at times. So that's given him a bit more freedom. He hit the crossbar, didn't he, from an advanced position on Saturday. Knudsen, earlier in the season, we were talking about him being a good centre back, and he's been well suited to sort of a back three or even centre half in a back two, but. He's also snuck up there in terms of assists. I think he's up to 7 now, which puts him right up there in terms of championship assists. And I think he quite relishes being able to get forward as well on the overlap. So, I've quite liked the look of this 3-4-3 system.
And then, obviously, that the knock-on effect from that system means that you have to, you've got the two central midfielders and then the three front players. And one that got his first real chance at that was Mustafa Carriol, and for 45 minutes at least we saw exactly why he'd been signed. Pace, dribbling, the one where he just burned between three men was fantastic, and it's just a shame it was only 45 minutes with that illness kind of limiting him somewhat.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've seen, I think Ipswich, maybe that's been one of the issues over the last little while, has been a lack of pace and a lack of dynamism. He certainly had all that in abundance, as you say, that one moment where he just blazed past three players and left it looked like they were in quicksand. And as a supporter, that's what you pay your money for. You want to be excited, and he certainly got people off their feet. Missed a sitter early on. He did all the hard work in jinking inside and stung the palms of the goalkeeper, and then completely fluffed the follow-up effort. But kept his head up, kept going, scored a good goal, took it really well actually, watching it back a second time. The ball, A, he had the pace to get to the ball and nod it ahead of himself, and then B, it's a bouncing ball, isn't it, inside the box, and he just caresses it side-footed across the goalkeeper. And then we get to the debate about whether he should have been taken off at half-time.
Yeah, well, we'll hear from Muzzy first, because he was suffering with illness in the lead-up to the game, and it sounds as if it took a little bit of a white lie to get him on the pitch to start with. So we'll just hear what Muzzy had to say about that.
I don't really want to say anything, because the gaffer asked me if I was 100% fine, and I said yeah, because I just want to play. But yeah, Wednesday weren't too good for me. I was ill, so. But I had a 45-minute session yesterday, and felt a little bit better, got some food down me and that, so yeah, for me I'm happy that I could have been I was out there and managed to help the boys along the way. I thought I was going to get at least another 15 minutes, maybe get another chance to try and score a second, but at the end of the day it's a team game, and obviously the result's what matters, and the gaffer felt that it was right. He knew that it was going to be probably a bit of a scrap in the second half and probably wouldn't have got as much touches that I did in the first, so he made the right decision and we won. If we probably didn't get the right result, I could have probably knocked on his door on Monday and said, "Gaffer, you've got to give me 15." But I'm cool.
So yeah, he told Mick he was 100% when he wasn't, and he got on the field and scored the winner. And no harm in white lies, is there? Did the trick this week.
Yeah, and then I think Mick probably saw through the white lie at half time, because I asked Mick, did he want to come off? Did he ask to come off at half time? And he said no, but I asked him, how are you? And he said, okay. And I think Mick kind of saw through that. It wasn't a, I'm fine, gaffer, leave me on. So he said he'd run his race. He might have got another 15 minutes out of him, but I can understand the reasoning to take him off if he's had sickness and all the rest of it in the week.
He's goosed.
it's goofed, as Mick would say. Yeah, the bigger question for me was the decision with who to replace him with. He had the perfect like-for-like option on the bench in Bersantolina, even Grant Ward as well. The system, as we've been discussing, had worked well. It had really put Preston on the back foot. Alex Neil had made a double substitution in the 37th minute. He was rejigging his back four, trying to do all sorts of things desperately to cope with Ipswich. And Mick decided to kind of shut up shop and play for the 1-0, effectively, in terms of bringing on Luke Higham for Carrio. He abandoned the system. It went very much to a sort of a 5-3-2. Higham was the most advanced of the three midfielders, which we're not used to seeing him in. Thankfully, it worked, and Preston weren't great. Is that because Ipswich didn't allow them to play? But it was a scrappy half, a very scrappy half. Preston were restricted to long ranges. They never looked like scoring, to be fair. So we have to give Mick and Ipswich credit, I guess. But I think on other occasions, as we've seen in the past, those sort of cautious tactical decisions have come back to haunt them. And I think that's at the crux of, at the heart of some people's frustrations.
We'll just hear what Mick had to say about the two players we've just spoken about, really. Cameron Carter-Vickers and his back three, and Mustafa Carrio.
Yeah, they've been very good, because Cameron played it at Sheffield United, and Chambers organises them really well. Yeah, it's been three good performances, and you know, you were at the game. We should have had 3 points at Norwich, and we didn't. And I think we were done with a dodgy old decision in midweek, and then today we've played well and won. Delighted getting Muzzy, and I think he's shown today what he's capable of. Although I never thought for 1 minute he'd play the whole game, having had diarrhoea and sickness in the week. I think we'd have got another 15 minutes out of him, but he'd run his race. And they changed it before half-time and stuck Harrop on in the midfield, so it was a tactical one as much as a physical one.
And that moves us on to the big debate about Mick McCarthy, which, regardless of all these results and however far Ipswich are from the playoffs between now and May, the overarching question until it's answered is Mick's future. And I think before, during and after all of these games this week, it's been discussed and it will be discussed. So strange. It's hard to know what's going on, isn't it?
We're finding it a bit tiresome now, so I'm sure the fans are. Asking the same old questions and not really getting any further forward with an answer. I think we made a bit of headway with Mick on the pre-Cardiff game, where he talked about he's due to speak with Marcus about it in the next 3 to 4 weeks and make a decision on his future. He said he thinks Marcus would like to stick with him, and sort of intimated if there's a contract offer put on the table, that it sounds like he's ready to accept it. I think he's talked about a small section of fans that are against him and a vocal minority. That in itself is very much up for debate. It's a very difficult thing for us to judge. I mean, going on the polls that we've run on the internet, it's about
72 no.
72 saying he shouldn't be offered a contract, and 28 saying yes, he should. So that obviously goes against very much what Mick himself has said. Yeah, okay, that was about 3,000 votes on that, so it's not definitive. I appreciate that those that go on the internet aren't a complete representation of Ipswich Town fans per se, but it gives a little idea of what the split is at the moment. One thing's for sure is that all this sort of infighting amongst Ipswich Town fans is not particularly healthy at the moment. We've got sort of staunch Mick defendants, you've got people that very much want him out, and then there's a lot of people, I think, very much sort of in the middle ground, and probably include myself in this, in terms of I can see both sides of the argument in terms of what Mick brings to the table, how he's not helped himself in his demeanour and some of the cautious tactics that we've discussed. But one thing is for sure, we need an answer on this soon, because this is not helpful to anyone at the moment. No one seems to be able to fully enjoy the wins when they come along, because there is this so much uncertainty about the place. And I've just written this in a piece today that I don't think Marcus Evans can kind of stay silent now. I think it's all very well staying out of the limelight when things are going well. But right now, with the general mood around the club, I think Town fans deserve to hear from him, and he needs to sell his vision to them. He needs to tell them, is he sticking with Mick? Is he going to try something different? And whichever decision he makes, he needs to fully explain that.
There's a big milestone coming up in March, and it is important, the sale of season tickets. As we saw, the Cardiff game was another milestone low in terms of attendance, the lowest, that's September 1998, the lowest since then. Season tickets are important to the club, and you find it hard to imagine how they're going to send out what is usually a bit of a brochure, a bit of this is what you can get behind, this is what your money's going to be getting you over the next 12 months, and this is where we're going. And how can they possibly market next season when the biggest question of all is left unanswered? And Mick does say that he's going to meet or chat with Evans over the next 3 to 4 weeks to discuss that. It's just whether we find out the answer to that conversation following those talks.
I'm not convinced they will. I don't think the time frame is going to work. I think they'll be working on, from what I understand, this week Marcus is ready to sign off on the prices for the season tickets for next year. You would like to think he's learnt from the mistake of last year and raising them by 1%, you know, the unrest that caused against the minimal gains financially was just crazy that they even took that risk, to be honest, the ill feeling that it generated. So if he is going to stick with Mick McCarthy, they need to sugarcoat that with, I think, a drop in season ticket prices, and a significant one at that. People will say, well, one minute we're saying spend some more money, Marcus, and the next minute we're telling him to take a hit on prices. But I think at the moment the bigger issue really is to regenerate the feel-good factor and around the club at the moment, and that's going to mean making sure that the stadium isn't two-thirds empty and people are drifting away. They need to do stuff to generate goodwill first and foremost above anything at the moment.
You'd hope he'd know that, and I'm sure he does. You don't get to be in the position that he's in by not knowing that knowing what's going on in his markets and his businesses.
And the great irony is he's a man who's made his millions through selling tickets. So for all this kind of discussion about what the small minority is and how many people are truly upset and all the rest of it, the attendances are there in black and white. That's fact. The fact is that the crowds are dropping to a 20-year low for league attendances, and money will talk with Marcus. And for a club like Ipswich that's not getting the riches of TV deals from the Premier League, every penny they get in through the gate counts. And I know this is counterintuitive to what I've just said about cutting season ticket prices, but there's got to be a balance there in terms of what they're offering people now, and they've got to, especially if they're sticking with Mick McCarthy, then they've got to he's got to really sell that to fans and say, we're sticking with him and this is what I'm going to try and do in the transfer market, or, you know, whatever he thinks. If he believes in this five-point plan, he needs to make people believe in it, because at the moment I have sympathy with Mick, because he's the one that's kind of has to front up to all of the questions. Ian Milne does his bits and pieces as managing director. I feel like he's not fully part of that inner circle of discussion at times. I think it's Mick and Marcus very much are the two men at the very top. Mick has to be the one that fronts up and takes all of the flak. He's not helped himself. I mean, the Norwich thing was utterly ridiculous. I'm sorry, that was aimed in the direction of the fans. Whether that's right or wrong, they've given it out, he's given it back.
The apology wasn't what was required, was it? Almost better not to have said anything?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's clear as day. He pushes Joe Garner out the way. The rest of them all go and sort of celebrate in the direction of the goal, and he makes a beeline towards the fans. I mean, he's a human being. If somebody had been shouting swear words at me for however long, I don't know how I'd react to that. But you know, the phrase "the customer is always right," and you know, people can be rude to you, and privately he can say what he likes about what he thinks about that section, but don't, I don't know, it's heat of the moment stuff, isn't it? But it's not, that's not helped his cause. And I think the debate we should be having, and should have been having perhaps a bit longer, should have been surrounding the owner and where this club is going long term. And yet Mick continually, through actions like that, and it's not the first time, is it? It's, you know, there's been lots of little snarky, dismissive comments in his press conferences, and it's done a lot of damage with his reputation. And I think, you know, as much respect and admiration I've got for Mick as a person, from what we see of him behind the scenes and the way the players respect him and what he's done on a budget, I get all of that. I just think there's too much damage done there now, unfortunately, and this situation that we're discussing is not healthy for anyone, and perhaps they've come to the end of a natural cycle, and Marcus needs to try something a little bit different just to kind of reignite people's passion and all the rest of it.
But yeah, I think you know, he's in the lead up to the Preston game in particular, he said that he thinks that Marcus would like him to stay, and actually his post-match interview, on which was with Channel 5 yesterday, was also particularly positive about his thoughts on staying. I think he was quite clear that if he's asked to stay and he thinks he might, then he'd be up for that.
Mm.
And if he does, there are some positives that they can try and sell. But I think I think you're right. It does need the owner to be the one putting those across. There's the academy has got a good crop coming through, but it needs the owner to be doing that now rather than Mick, because he just to be so quiet for so long and expect people to buy into what you're doing. I find it really hard to see how a man who has made such a success of himself business wise hasn't engaged with the customers. Of one of his most high profile businesses. It's very strange.
It is strange, and I think there's, and I've talked about it in the piece again today, about there's this kind of undertone of conspiracy theories and distrust and cynicism amongst fans. You see all sorts of theories about everything now at the moment, about the way Marcus runs the club and finances, and people just can't get their head around. I think looking from the outside in, he is putting X million pounds in a year with seemingly no chance of a return at the moment, because they look a million miles away from being a genuine promotion contender. So you just start to think, well, what is the long-term plan? How many years is he prepared to do this before he cuts his losses? And it's led to a lot of cynicism, a lot of mistrust, and they need to nip all of that in the bud, and they need to get everybody pulling in the same direction again, because at the moment it just feels so fractured. And and it's only going to take one man to be able to front up and be able to give people the answers that they deserve answers to.
I think in a way they're lucky that they're in the football business in this situation, because if you look at any other company in any other brand, there's not quite the same loyalty there. Like whatever many fans are saying now and feel, they're obviously, they're right if they feel like they don't want to support the club at the moment and attend games, and that's up to them. But deep down, they all still want Ipswich Town to be a success, and that's the kind of, as cynical as it may sound, that's the part of people that Marcus and Mick need to, if it is indeed Mick, they need to pull on that, because they're lucky that that's still there. Mm. They wouldn't be there if he was running a clothing line, for example. No. If someone had gone off a brand of jumpers or a jar of sauce, they weren't into that anymore. There's not the loyalty there, but they're lucky that there are people, thousands and thousands of people across the world, that have got something that they can pull on.
Yeah, but everybody has a limit as well, don't they? And you know, we're talking about getting down to the absolute hardcore of fans now. I don't know what that is. You know, it's slowly dwindling down. We're starting to find out how low does it go before people keep going out of a sense of loyalty and dedication and habit and all the rest of it. We're down to what, 10? Going to be sub 10,000 season ticket holders. I don't know. We're not talking about fair weather supporters that are walking away here as well.
You're not talking about a few thousand that you've picked up off the back of a successful season, a year in the Premier League where they quite fancied seeing your Man United's and Liverpool's in town. We're talking about people that have had, and I come across a lot of these people in real life, I'm not just talking about on the internet, that have been going, that tell me that they've been season ticket holders uninterrupted for 10, 20, 30 plus years in some cases, and they've just said, I don't want to go anymore. I've just lost my passion for it. And once those people stop going, they're very hard to get back because they find other things to spend their time and money on. And that's my concern with Ipswich. They're losing an older generation of fans, and they're not really doing a huge amount to attract a new generation of fans, and that's a concern.
That all got quite heavy.
It did.
But it's important. It's important stuff, but I think let's move on to some trivial matters of football.
Excellent.
Some good old trivial football matters. The latest Room 101. Stu, do you remember what the last one that we did of this 2 weeks ago was?
No.
Nor do I. But I've got a laptop in front of me so I can look it up. Ready?
Go on.
We asked, which is more annoying? Mark was with us, actually, the last time. Mark Heath was with us.
Yeah.
And he put forward pathetic diving. And I put forward crazy coloured boots. And it was a unanimous victory, pretty much, for diving. With 82%, so...
Yep.
Pathetic diving enters Room 101. I feel sure it might have been in there already, actually. But
quite possibly.
We'll let Mark have that. What have you got for us this week? What grinds your gears? What gets you going?
Well, this was one from yesterday's game at Deepdale, and I don't know if this will resonate with any of our listeners or whether this is just a thing for us as journalists that annoys us, but the clock started for the second half on the big screen, and it was a clock that counted down backwards. No, it wasn't. I tell
no,
a lie.
It
just started again from zero, didn't it, for the second half, instead of starting from 45 and counting onwards, which meant that every time we needed to check what minute something had happened in, we had to do a bit of rudimentary maths, which journalists aren't particularly good at.
Yeah, we're words, aren't we?
Words, yeah.
Words, not numbers. The other one's annoying as well, actually, when it counts down. That
backwards
there are some
clocks.
Grounds in the country that do that, and I find that one harder, actually, math-wise.
Yeah, I don't know, as a fan as well, do you want to, I suppose if you're nervily trying to hang on to a 1-0 win, would you prefer to see a backwards counting clock down to zero, thinking, I don't know.
I actually don't know if the Ipswich fans would even have been able to see that clock, because the screen was on the roof of the stand they were sat in.
Yeah.
So I think that the only point of reference for the 400 odd Ipswich fans that went to Preston was an actual clock,
yeah.
An analogue clock on the...
That I do like. I think all ground should have a big analogue, just plain white face clock at the top of a stand. I think that's quite iconic.
Where should we put that at Portman Road?
What
about on the front of the tunnel area?
Yeah, something like
that. Quite good. Or that weird little section between the away fans and the south stand where nothing happens apart from police.
Yeah.
Just put it there. We'll write to the club. Mine is a word which the commentator from the local radio in Preston and the announcer at Deepdale said yesterday, whenever talking about the goalkeepers, they always talked about them being in goals. They're not in goals, are they? They're in
with
goal.
An S on the end.
Yeah,
like
in goals. It just doesn't make any
I've
sense.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I used to live in Birmingham and it's a big thing there. It annoyed me there and north of Birmingham as well. It just doesn't make much sense to me in goals. Sure, they're in goal, in both goals at one stage in the game.
Yeah.
But they're in goal, aren't they? They're a goalkeeper. They're not a goals keeper.
I was about to dismiss that out of hand, but
it's got you.
They are in goals plural during a game, so.
But they're not a goals keeper. You'd have to do that as well.
Yeah.
You have to go for.
No, you're right. It's rubbish.
We put a poll out on these on Twitter, so you can have a vote. I do not know how I'm going to explain that.
Either of these, to be
yeah.
honest, rubbish clocks and yeah, they're not our best two
yeah,
offerings.
It's not great, but they're both annoying. So if you could help us out with a little vote online, that would be great. We'll put that poll up when we post the podcast. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Sorry it got a bit heavy, but I'm sure you all
agree. Should I do my little noise that I do with my cheek just to lighten the mood?
Yeah. To set this up, it can sometimes, you know, there's a lot of work going on in our office and things can get tense. Stu has a great way of diffusing that. I'll let you do the noise and then you can explain what on earth you're doing. That is not a dripping tap. That is chief football writer, author of The Verdict, Stuart Watson, making a noise with his cheek. So can you talk us just through what you're doing there, Stu?
Just,
and why, more importantly?
Just because I can, and just flick your cheek with your finger and make a little noise of a dripping tap. It's just something I do.
Excellent. Thanks for listening. Sorry about that. We'll see you next week. Don't forget you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, listen through our website, and you can read everything that we write online, including this man, Stuart Watson. Give you the last word.